Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
And welcome to the Raw Review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by the Dudley Boys of What Culture, Michael Hanford and Michael Sidgwick, here to review everything that happened on last night's episode of Monday Night Raw. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts, where we not only review Raw and SmackDown, but also the Wednesday Night War between AEW and NXT, pay-per-views, we have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week, complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on wrestle culture. As I said, they're joined by Hamford and Sidgwick to review a, let's say, chaotic episode of Monday Night Raw. Partially, it can be excused because of the very late diagnosis yesterday of Drew McIntyre, who now has COVID, unfortunately. Wish him well in his recovery, of course, there. But also, I don't think we can excuse all of Monday Night Raw's crapness, Sidg.
I can't excuse it. As with so much else in professional wrestling, the standard has been set when a huge main event was disrupted through COVID on AEW Dynamite. Tony Khan pivoted. He realized that there are actually, if you book really well and consistently, you can parachute other names from other programs into your main event picture if you're a thorough and consistent booker, arriving at Jon Moxley versus Eddie Kingston, which spun off into one of the best feuds of the entire year. So no, there is no excuse. Realistically, if this was a dud show following a few pretty damn good ones by a competent pro wrestling company, and the turmoil of the last minute led the show to be not very good, I probably would be a lot more sympathetic. And obviously, I'm very sympathetic to Drew McIntyre. But I'm not, because they do this all the time. Like, ravaged last minute, it's been sabotaged by a pandemic, it's no real different to them sabotaging it themselves all the time. Here's where I am at, with this particular episode of Monday Night Raw. Before we started recording, I got the twinge. I thought, oh God, I kind of need a piss here. You know what I thought? I thought, you know what? I'll have it halfway through the podcast. I'll just have it through the podcast instead.
The irony of this, of course, is we were previewing Raw yesterday and we said literally the only thing they'd announced was Drew McIntyre versus Randy Orton, non-title. And, you know, reports come out today. Obviously, an element of this, is again, as I said, can be attributed to losing your world champion with, a few hours before the show, effectively. But they're sat there rewriting the show with an hour to go and you sense that even the stuff that they kept, it wasn't exactly gold, was it?
Yeah, I think there's been a move to excuse the ills of this Raw based on the ills of Drew McIntyre. The Global Bastard has nothing to do with the quality of this episode of Raw, unless the Global Bastard is the new nickname for Vince McMahon. If you look, like, just before we go into the deep dive on Raw, if you look at this episode, what changed as a result of them getting that news last minute? Instead of cutting a cocksure promo at Goldberg's expense, in the middle of the ring, Drew McIntyre cut it from wherever he was quarantined, following an explanation that he gave. The only thing that's actually really changed here is that WWE have finally acknowledged that COVID-19 exists, for one, and they've lent on Triple H instead of anyone of the legends from last week, Hulk Hogan, Torrie Wilson, Like, they've picked Triple H instead as the one, like, parachuting at the last minute. If you look at the rest of this edition of Raw, I refuse to accept that any of it is a result of Drew's sudden positive test, other than the vignette that Drew had to submit instead of the interview he cut in the middle of the ring. So any of the chaos or any of the bad booking or any of the lame scripting, again, outside of the Triple H dialogue, you can just attribute to the way that they make this wrestling show. It was a bad Raw, but we've reviewed bad Raws before without the WWE champion getting a positive test hours before kickoff. I think it's a massive overstatement and a big excuse that a lot of the usual suspects, I think, will lean on for this one.
If they could book, they could have had X, Y, or Z babyface just take the role of Drew McIntyre in that match with Randy Orton. And realistically, considering that, as far as I'm aware, the usual cast was all present, with the possible exception of Ricochet. I'm not alluding to why he wasn't there, but most of the guys were there. They've got no excuse. They've got no excuse. They never do. They never do.
I think the big stunt at the end, which we'll get to, was happening with or without Triple H in that match. I think it was happening with Drew in that match. Do you know what I mean? Like, you just...
It was pre-taped because it was CGI fire. So, obviously, they've had the plan to do that. No, you're right. They were going to do this match with Drew and Randy. And Drew was going to get taken out of it via whatever means. Maybe his sword would have been on fire instead of the sledgehammer.
Oh.
Not sure why you'd get a sword in a wrestling match, but at the same time, Triple H, you dick, I don't know why you'd get a sledgehammer either. It's a murder weapon. That's the thing with Triple H's goddamn sledgehammer. I was thinking, all right, okay, well, you know, it's a sword. You can't use a sword. So that was a stupid idea. You can't have a sword on fire because that would, to set the sword alight, you would have to make the, they have to intimate that Drew McIntyre was going to use the sword in a wrestling match. That would be absurd. That would be absolutely absurd. He can't be doing that. Oh, but you know, nah. Sledgehammer's fine.
Typical anti-WWE bias, is Ricky, not thinking it through. Obviously, because in a wrestling context, Triple H puts the hammer in front of his hand. If Drew did that, he'd put a sword clean through his hand. He'd have to use it a different way. He'd have to swing the sword rather than the hammer.
This is all very true.
Let's start the show then at the beginning with Triple H coming out. But before he can say anything, of course... aside from Welcome to Monday Night Raw, Orton interrupts. He says, the office has shown up because Drew McIntyre can't. They don't reference why Drew McIntyre isn't there. I genuinely thought for a split second they might not acknowledge any of this and just say...
I thought you were going to think. They never have.
Just say, oh, he's under the weather. Orton said he was meant to have a big match tonight, but Triple H said... They both know that that can't happen. I just like that terminology. Well, that's not happening anymore. No more big matches. Bollocks to that.
Who's gone? We've got anyone else?
He said Orton knew that Triple H was there to make some sort of announcement, maybe even awarding the WWE Championship right now. No, please God, no. Triple H suggested, oh, if you want to be champion, you should probably win the Rumble. Again, please God, no. Triple H talked about being in awe of Orton setting people on fire, basically. Because that was the only thing standing in the way of him becoming champion again or something. But he just couldn't understand, aside from the murder bit, which was completely understandable, why he had to kick old people in the head. he said, that doesn't benefit you. Also, where'd you get those goggles from? They look really cool. He said Triple H had lost the admiration he had for Orton, and he was an arsehole, basically. Orton said he was, oh, Jesus, what year is this? Orton said he was a legend in his own time, just like Triple H was, and said, oh, let's have a fight, King of Kings, et cetera, et cetera. And then I'll tell you what, here's an insult we haven't heard before. He said, let's have a fight. Triple H said, nah, you're all right. And he said, oh, your balls are in your wife's purse. Literally, they've been an insult they've used, I reckon, about 10 times, which, of course, got the ire up of Triple H, who went to say something, but surprise, punched Orton in the face. Orton smiled, held his face, and basically took that as a yes, that they were going to not have a match later. They were going to have a fight, Michael Sidgwick.
On that point, I'm pretty certain to the exact verb, retrieve, they have used that line. Like, they absolutely have used it before. Again, the idea that Triple H has to come in to save the day is hilarious, and it's an indictment of their company star making process, because there was no one else that they thought was an adequate replacement for Drew McIntyre as a main event on that show. Hilarious. Indictment of the company.
I got so bored watching this opening promo, Sidge, that I just was fascinated by how wrinkly Triple H's forehead is, but how smooth the top of his head is. That's all I could think about watching this promo, because I could not be arsed already. He came out and I thought, right, he's going to say, look, you know, these things happen. It's an awful situation, but don't worry, we're going to put on a great show tonight. And then in the end, they just went, oh, let's just do Triple H Randy Orton again.
Like two bollocks at once. The shriveled and then the unshriveled, but all on the same head. Before Hamflet gives his thoughts, there's one more thing on this, just indictment of the company and what it's incapable of doing in 2021. I pissed myself laughing at the idea that you can incinerate the Fiend, but don't be mean to Ric Flair. You can do what you want with Bray Wyatt, but don't be nasty to Richard Fleer. Richard Fleer paved the way for what you're doing. Do not be nasty to Richard Fleer. I just thought it was hilarious.
I was thinking about, like, you're watching the end of TLC and Triple H, like that gif of Triple H when he's like being really smug with CM Punk, you know, where he purses his lips. He's like, on fire. And then last week, Mark Henry crying, going away on his little scooter, and Triple H knocking the telly over. Right, I'm going to Raw next week. Oh, and what is the subtext there? Like, if we're not told outright every few months, hey, you know you've not been watching Raw. Here's some people you actually like. Tune in. Like, Triple H should now bury it in the subtext as well. That's like how the people in Gorilla think as well. He did what? It's a Big Show. Loved it. I don't know if it's a joke at Bray Wyatt's expense or at all of ours, but I'd rather choose it to be the former, because otherwise it makes a mockery of me too.
But just the idea, if you look at this like a strict story of, it's one thing to set Bray Wyatt on fire. Everyone knows he's coming back. None of this, it's all bad. But don't be nasty to Ric Flair. He cries a lot. Those are permanent scars.
He's back in the game. He's fine now. He's back in the game.
I was going to say, things are looking up for Ric Flair, because what happened next was Charlotte Flair versus Lacey Evans. Before that, Sarah Schreiber caught up with Flair backstage, I think to desperately still present her as a babyface, despite everything, despite, you know, 2021's version of I don't need to anymore that we got last week. She said, things got heated last week. That's why I got angry. But it's all Lacey Evans' fault. I'm going to teach her a lesson. Charlotte goes down to the ring. Schreiber waits around and catches Evans, who said, you know what? Yeah, that old creepy bastard, he's a charming man's man, and anyone would want some of that. And she dedicated the match to him and blew him a little kiss. Before the match could begin, by the way, we got that video by Drew McIntyre confirming the fact that he tested positive for COVID-19. Fortunate enough not to have any symptoms, though. And I don't know whether this was WWE. I sense it was probably more Drew McIntyre pushing this point. He encouraged everyone to practice social distancing, wear your mask, and stay safe.
Doesn't count New Year's Eve parties, no? Don't get like, wrestling's had multiple reckonings, hasn't it? Like, I understand.
Retribution!
Like, I get that if you're a wrestler, and this is cross-company, obviously, AEW everywhere, NXT at the CWC. If you're getting tested all the time and you're around people all the time, and for the most part, you're not catching it, or your friends aren't catching it, or Jake Roberts hasn't keeled over yet, you are going to develop a bit of a arrogance towards it, I think. I think that's what's happening here. And I don't know why the policy has now changed. I don't mind that it has. This is not me saying that they shouldn't just come out and say it. And it's probably healthier to make it, like, normalize it in conversation on wrestling shows, that wrestlers can now say they've had it. Nick Jackson has said it, hasn't he? And am I right in thinking it's from the time when he was behind a door?
Yeah.
And Matt was like, I'll speak to Marvez. Yeah, you say that. Like, it's about
camera, wasn't it, allegedly?
Yeah. It's about time that we normalize it when wrestlers are having it, because I think it's healthy, because I honestly think, and I base this on those dreadful pictures of the New Year's parties, seeing too much of wrestlers interacting in what looks like a version of normal that none of us have access to, I think this is a far healthier step forward, because I'd like to think it makes the wrestlers think twice, no matter how much they're being tested, no matter how much the temperature's checked, no matter how much it must feel like, if you're a wrestler in the last 8 months, you feel, probably a better choice of words here, a little bit immune to what's gone on in the world because of what your workplace looks like. It's probably much better that we move in this direction.
Yeah, I was happy with this. like completely belated. But I hate when Jim Ross very listlessly says, "Yeah, get tested, wear your masks, folks." And he sat there, like crammed into a commentary booth with another guy who's not exactly young in Schiavone, not wearing his actual mask. So yeah, maybe the time, considering this whole thing is resurgent, the time now is to do more safety protocols. Like, it all feels a little like lip service, like almost literal window dressing when you see like the New Japan commentary team, for example, divided between plexiglass. It often just feels like a thing to do, but if they've got even a minimal impact, why the hell not?
Let's return to the match, though. It was Charlotte Flair versus Lacey Evans. Evans left the ring after escaping an attempt at a figure eight by Charlotte Flair. And then Ric Flair came down in the midst of a show, like we say, mentioning COVID quite obviously and a potential outbreak within WWE. He's an old guy. He's back. He came down the ramp, of course, stood at ringside. They barely mentioned, as me and Hamlet alluded to, the 28 years that this is of Monday Night Raw yesterday. Charlotte hits natural selection on Lacey Evans, but Rick quite blatantly just puts her boot on the rope and points out to the referee that that should break the count. They brawl near the ropes again, and Rick trips Charlotte, holds down her legs. Lacey Evans pins her. And then Sarah Schreiber tries to catch up with them backstage, but they're just like, "Ah, bollocks to you, we're off. I think I'm going to change at the hotel.
Yeah, we'll have full sex with Ric Flair."
This made me sick in my mouth, Michael Hamler.
Right, we could dive in on all the shagging, but first, let's do a bit of analysis. This was a really bad match. Like, this was a woeful pro wrestling match.
I had flashbacks to the Rumble. Lacey Evans
and Natalya, I think it was.
That was
When she started, in 2019. The match here is obviously laid out to have Charlotte be the veteran and for Lacey Evans to look great. They were given loads of time, way too much, to have that match. To if you're going to put Lacey Evans in a big angle with Ric Flair and obviously presumably Charlotte Flair, then they want this big announcement of a match to start it off, a big statement contest. It was not that. It wasn't just a natural selection that looked whiffed again. It's like they were all over the place. It was really sloppy stuff. Which gets us back to the shagging because Ric Flair is nailing Lacey Evans now. I think we laughed about that in the preview yesterday. I don't think there's too much wrong with that story, but with the applied context, which you of course mentioned, coming off the back of the Drew McIntyre COVID announcement, we've got Ric Flair and Lacey Evans interacting. Ric Flair's still in the building. It looked pretty awful in the context of which it was delivered, but I don't actually mind it as a bit of a knockabout angle. Charlotte's the big show now. She just turns every week. So I've lost interest in caring about this character. She's not the queen. She's just this gimmick. They just decide what they're going to do with Charlotte once a week and then go out and do it and expect us to just stick with it because the matches are good. Well, the match wasn't good this week, so I don't need to stick with her either. I'll take the comedy of the Ric Flair, Lacey Evans angle. It's something different than Charlotte Flair's slow, like verbose, almost Randy Orton promo style. I've got no interest in that at the moment. This made it interesting, but dreadful match.
This match was so dire, and yet it represents an improvement on a 2019 match fought between Charlotte Flair and Lacey Evans, where Lacey Evans was so bad that she didn't know how to position herself to receive a chop from a Flair. She was standing there with her shoulder, like in her eye. It was better than that. That's one of the worst matches I've ever seen. Like, again, Lacey Evans is going to wrestle like Lacey Evans is always going to wrestle when she was promoted, despite not being ready, as a statuesque blonde with a background WWE could exploit in its marketing. So I'm watching it and I just feel the same sense of hopelessness I feel about so much of this product. God knows what to think of Charlotte Flair. She's a dick. I mean, she is a dick, but WWE values dicks. So they are, and it's just that wild dissonance of the presentation and how people actually receive it, being human beings. The whole thing's rotten, but I have to echo Hamlet's point there. So much of this is drab, repetitive, boring, anti-spectacle pro wrestling, none of which is remotely helped by the idea that we've had years and years and years and years and years and none of this ultimately mattering, that I will take something that will inspire any kind of chat. And, Ric Flair, Pork and Lacey Evans, that's sick. That's something. That's something.
It's a livener, isn't it? It's a bit of a livener, I think.
It is, isn't it?
It's a conversation piece.
You're nasty. I mean, to use Lacey Evans' words. Right back at her.
When did Lacey Evans become Ace Ventura? Lace Ventura, pet detective. Do you know that little laugh? It's horrendous. Stop it.
Come on, Rick, come back in. I'm on nature calls. I'm getting on.
Can I?
Look at us. We've become everything we
hate. Alrighty then.
We've become everything we hate. There's people listening to this podcast now that weren't born when these films came out. Miz and Morrison are going to do their Dumb and Dumber shtick in a bit with them.
Can I take those panties off? Alrighty then.
Oh, thinking of that awful little giggle he does sometimes.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet Plush Care, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Oh, God.
Speaking of Jim Carrey characters, though, Dumb and Dumber popped up into
the segue. What a goddamn pro.
We can't slag it off now, though, can we? Bloody WWE.
That's what everyone's 30-something. The whole of pop culture tells me this. Stranger Things, Star Wars franchise continuing. Everyone's 30-something now.
Those pennies up.
Miz and Morrison were unbearable again, interrupting who'd already been interrupted by Sheamus, who was meant to be. Anyway, basically, Sheamus said if McIntyre respects Keith Lee, then so does he. They go to shake hands. Miz and Morrison, as I say, interrupt. They get compared to Dumb and Dumber, a film that came out 27 years ago.
Hey. Can't say
but now we can't judge it. And they did do a topical reference. They referenced the Cleveland Browns toppling the Pittsburgh Steelers. Football.
What about Kanye West later in the show as well?
Yeah, they did. They talked about Kim Kardashian and Kanye. Yeah. They challenged them to a match and did the honestly, I think correct might be my least favorite thing in wrestling right now. It's
think about this. Wilborn doesn't like something annoying.
Mm.
The latitude he has for WWE's bollocks with the Iconics. And even he can't abide this.
Mm.
One day they'll split Miz and Morrison up and Wilborn will be like, why? Get them back together. Remember the correct era?
They said they set up a match, tag match for later on.
What was scheduled, Wilborn? Do you know? Is that in your notes?
Well, I'll tell you what came next. Jackson Biker versus Jeff Hardy.
Skip.
Oh, thank the whole thing, all six matches that they booked in this one segment. Right. Skip them all.
Yeah. So to clarify here, I know you're gonna have a go at me because you said to skip this, but I just want to get into the weeds a little bit.
Oh God, you don't get it.
What was scheduled, actually, I should say, was
I don't want to talk about it.
What was scheduled, though, was a match between Elias and Jeff Hardy, who I'm fairly certain had a fairly conclusive blow-off match in which someone got electrocuted a few weeks ago.
Couldn't believe this. I could not believe this. Well, they're renewing hostilities. Why? Why? It wasn't very good.
Elias being held back by Jackson Ryker.
Elias had an injury, so Jackson Ryker had a match and won with the schoolboy, and then Hardy went, no, let's do it again, wasn't ready, starting again from now, and they had a match with Elias after the break, but he said, Jackson Ryker, please don't interfere, so he didn't interfere, and Jeff Hardy won with a twist of fate and a swanton bomb.
Everybody sucks. Everybody.
Can I say one thing? I think it was meant to get over Elias as a comedy guy. And there was one thing that I liked. Who's the commentator on Raw? They're all the same. Is it Phillips?
Yeah.
I'm Phillips, yeah.
Phillips said, also, or Saxon, or whoever it is, asked what the injury was. Like, Elias did the classic office style, looking at the computer to, like, deflect the conversation and just staring into the monitor like that. I thought that was good. I think Elias is quite funny. None of this is pro wrestling. None of it's good. Let's move on.
Okay. Well, enough of all this. It's now time for this.
It's short. It's crap. It's wrestling related. The 5-star review.
Nailed it. And this week's 5-star review is brought to you.
I don't know why it's Dusty Rhodes now.
By Coach Marv, who sent us a lovely email to the other day. Remember last week?
The regular.
I remember last week I talked about TM Hawk's engagement. Well, good news. Coach Marv says, following TM Hawk's email regarding his New Year's Day proposal, I thought I would email because I too proposed to my girlfriend of 5 years on New Year's Day. I'm happy to report we are now engaged to be married whenever the bastard allows. Congratulations to Coach Marv and Mrs.
Congratulations, Marv. Coach Marv.
Congrats.
Well, you don't need to congratulate him, Sidge, because he said, I was also lucky enough to receive acknowledgement of our engagement by one Andrew Pollard and one Michael Sidgwick, which was confusing to her when I said it gave me a huge pap. he says, it's been a tough spell for all of us, but despite losing two family members to the bastard, sorry to hear that, you guys have reignited my love for wrestling, and I can't thank yourself, the Dadleys, and everyone else involved enough for all that you do. You've created a community that has brought so many of us together as we look forward to the tireless banter each day. For this week's 5-star review, I'll hand it over to Hamflet to go over something of his choice. A thank you for his tireless optimism. Keep up the great content, lads. Stay safe. Keep being you. Thanks and kind regards, lads. Marv. Thank you for that, Marv. Don't forget, if you want to suggest a 5-star review, subscribe to What Culture Wrestling and leave us a review on there. Hamflet, so what did you go for?
Thank you, Coach Marv, for that kind message. Thank you, Les, for making me choose something for the 5-star review. We did a preview yesterday and we were talking about how there's been 28 years of Monday Night Raw, so it felt fitting to try and come up with a deep pull from Raw's illustrious history. And this one was supposed to turn my reputation around. I've taken pelters, somewhat rightfully so, from Sidgwick over the years for my dry taste in most things, in wrestling, in wrestling, in cinema, in food.
Literally.
And I thought, condiments. I can't eat them, but I want to show him that I can watch them and I can get through it. And I got news for you. He was right all along, and I can't. This was revolting. I could not cope with this footage.
I got to level with you guys. It's meant to be short. It's meant to be crap. It's meant to be wrestling related. It is a story beat of one of the all-time worst and most pointless things ever. I had a huge pap. We'll get to what bap me, but it was literally pissed myself laughing watching this morning.
What? So what have you chosen for us this week, Hamflet?
Well, it's John Cena versus Michael Cole in a barbecue bullying match, isn't it?
Remind us of the illustrious backstory to this.
Oh, Christ. Oh, Matt, John Cena's a piece of garbage, isn't he? So this was right around the time, obviously. They had this weird period, right, where Michael Cole obviously was the heel, and then they tried to rectify that and have him... Basically, he suffered at the consequences of all of his actions, and he had no choice but to go back to work and make good on it. But then for like a long period afterwards, he was still an arsehole. It took him years to phase down just how big a dick Michael Cole was from the peak year of him being a heel. This was wrapped up in that. John Cena Cedric will be able to correct me on this. He's really good on this era. Was this before or after they effectively did the same match with John Laurinaitis on pay-per-view?
This is after, because I to find some comments, because the WWE version of this, by the way, which is 6 minutes, which is all I was going to subject you to, which has 43 million views, by the way.
Of course it was because of the running. Yeah, they liked it so
much. There was an eight-minute version of this, which features John Cena chopping Michael Cole in the chest, which is actually quite enjoyable, to be perfectly honest. But in which Michael Cole, beforehand, we sort of jump in as the match is literally about to start, but he says, come on, let's just be friends, let's shake, and then changes his mind and goes, you don't want none of this. Oh, I'm going to embarrass you like John Laurinaitis did at Over the Limit or wherever it was.
Did this like really smell, this barbecue stuff?
Yeah, like that. They were still trotting this out.
I'm watching this from the video. I can't watch it on the network. I'm watching this thinking, it's 2011, because they're referring to the match at WrestleMania in 2011. This is 2012!
Think of the guy who runs in halfway through. That's the clue, isn't it?
Yeah, of course.
It's hit me now. Obviously, I don't want to spoil who shows up to turn things around for Michael Cole, but that's the clue, isn't it? And so they loved the agenting of that abysmal John Laurinaitis match, and it is abysmal. A big era for bullies being the baby faces, as always in WWE. Probably the moment it became standardized, actually, was when John Cena started doing stuff like this. And it's related to very little else other than who Cena was feuding and once lost to, who we'll get to later in the match, I guess. It doesn't hold up as like one of Cena's. Cena was okay in the ring still at this point. It wasn't like he wasn't at his 2015 peak.
For me. I just want to say that. Not for me.
No, yeah, we've sort of discussed that. But like, 2007, he was amazing. 2015, he came really good again. And I guess you can kind of like flip and flop on what you think of in the middle of that. But yeah, he had highs and lows, and this was a low.
So yeah, I really don't want to get into this. I hate this video. It is. So yeah, Cole, they've set up this match. People power, all that bollocks has gone prior to this. God, was this also the time then, presumably, when Cena was main eventing pay-per-views with Laurinaitis, whilst CM Punk was quietly retaining the WWE Championship for a year?
Yeah, that was the year before, wasn't it? So was it Over the Limit specifically where they had that match and then underneath Brian and Punk tore it up?
I love that match, man.
Just a quick check. Over the Limit. Oh God, look at that. I'm just looking at the layout of this. Kane versus Zack Ryder on the pre-show. Zack Ryder getting his win back. Oh no, sorry, losing in 7 minutes. Christian winning a battle royal and then later on defeating Cody Rhodes for the Intercontinental Championship. Brodus Clay beating The Miz. Sheamus defending his World Heavyweight Championship in a fatal four-way with Del Rio, Jericho, and Orton. And then, yeah, towards the end of the night, CM Punk, Daniel Bryan, 24 minutes for the WWE Championship, followed by Ryback versus Camacho that went 54 seconds. And, yeah, main event, John Laurinaitis defeating John Cena in a no-DQ match. 17 minutes. 17 sodding minutes that went. Anyway, back to Monday Night Raw in June. 2012, I think it was. So Cole, as I said, has cut this promo, and it concludes with him saying, "Need I remind you who I am? My name is Michael Cole, and don't you forget that." He's pointing his finger in John Cena's chest. Cena just smiles, does his little smirk, and says, "We're going to remember you as the guy tonight who got his ass kicked." Cena grabs Cole, rips his shirt open, chops him. He collapses to the mat. He pulls off his trousers. Lawler's shouting about Cole getting pantsed and having a bird-like chest. Cena kicks Cole in the dick. Cena's the baby face here, right?
Everyone's a dickhead. Everyone is a dickhead.
Like, it gives... I saw people in the comments saying this. It gives them flashbacks to, like, their bullies when people got bullied in school, because Cena, it cuts then, we miss out the bit with the chop to the chest and Lil Nate just really enjoying the entirety of this match. But he's got Michael Cole in a headlock, and he says, "That match was at WrestleMania." This is Cena. "That match at WrestleMania was a joke. Jerry Lawler whipped you and you know it. I think right now you owe an apology to the King. Say I'm sorry." And he got his head, you know, his hand around Cole's throat effectively, and he says, Jerry, my friend, I'm so sorry. Jerry, I'm so sorry." And Cena says, in babyface that he is, "That's a great start, but there's one more man who deserves an apology tonight, and that's the guy you drove off the commentary table, Hall of Famer Jim Ross. I know good old JR is watching, and I want you to give him a heartfelt apology." It's like cranks on him when he says apology to JR right now. And
what 1 year after he has? Like, a year plus has passed since this all happened. They're not, like, referencing the WrestleMania from a few months ago. Like, it's like that was all paid off, which is what messed with my head a little bit as well, in terms of the date. They've done all this.
But the funny thing is, Michael Cole's got a fat belly and he's pulling a funny face, and Jerry Lawler's laughing, so we should be laughing. Cole says, "JR, you're my mentor, you're my idol, you're the man I look up to. I'm sorry. Cena says, "One more thing. Man, I do love JR's barbecue sauce, don't y'all? So does Michael. Listen to him tell you how much he loves JR's barbecue sauce." And Cole says, "It's slobber knocker good."
My favorite bit of this.
Yeah, that is the best
bit. This is a goddamn segment. I pissed myself watching this. This is a goddamn segment masquerading as one to bury Michael Cole and to poke fun at Michael Cole for being out of shape and for being annoying and to try and get John Cena further over as this cool guy when actually he's punching down like the dickhead he is. And yet, at its core, it's another way to bury Jim Ross. Fantastic. Who would slobber knocker good? He says that stupid bollocks, doesn't he, Jim Ross, all the time? Let's just have Cole say that. It's actually the real target of the bullying here is Jim Ross. Again.
Cena says, "Well, that pretty much says it all. Man, I wish we had some barbecue sauce here tonight. And wouldn't you know it, Jerry Lawler just happens to have some bottles at ringside."
Typically, normally keep two bottles of alcohol there just in case any young fans.
Cena says, "Well, I won't be needing this anymore," and bonks Michael Cole on the head with the microphone. He goes out to ringside, takes the bottles from Lawler, coats Cole in the viscous liquid. Lawler has accidentally, you never guess what he's done, he's accidentally given him the spicy sauce. So he's going to have to cool it down, not with water, but with a fire extinguisher, literally shot for shot, as you two both mentioned, what happened with John Laurinaitis. Some knobheads in the crowd tried to start a yes chant. Michael Sidgwick dies a little bit more inside. And
hey, come on, they're just Big Show fans. It's fine.
And then Lawler just says the catchphrase that, you know, we all know and love. Let's say it together. "That's the icing on the barbecue." So then let's boys, wrap it up. Cena picks, well, do you want to mention the thing that you pointed out when we were talking about this yesterday, Hamlet, before we get into what happened next?
There is a moment in this that, like, yeah, people exaggerate on podcast. I, like, physically sick. This makes me, if I watch it, like, for any longer than a few seconds, I cannot bear it. I'm not a condiments guy. It's a It's a curse, not a blessing, I promise you. But there is a bit. Cole is covered in stuff, absolutely covered in the barbecue sauce. And that's obviously been the instruction. You know, Vince McMahon and his big visuals, they've been pissing and howling at this. Cena picks him up for the attitude adjustment. And this sludgy barbecue sauce just cascade. Like, it'd be beautiful if it wasn't so hideous to me. The way that this barbecue sauce cascades down Cena's chiseled back is absolutely revolting. It looks, for a split second, like one of those Silicon Valley millionaires parties where, like, have you seen the barbecue sauce fountain? You got to check out the barbecue sauce fountain. The way it just rolls down Cena's back, right down. Oh, it's absolutely awful. Like, it's grosser to me than Hulk Hogan applying lotion slightly lower on Brooke's back. It's outside of Cena and Michael Cole's control at this point. It's just going to go down his back, and he's wearing those jorts. In a minute, barbecue sauce is going to be in his ass crack.
That's your sauce down here. Grow up.
Oh.
But like
Jim Ross, like, what's he say? Like, chill out, Smith. Like, sauce it. That's just what he means. That's it. Lighten up, Francis.
Chill out, Smith.
No, yeah, I mean, Hamflet is very right in his description. Michael Cole is coated in it. It's on his boxer shorts. I mean, Cena's getting covered in it on his jorts and stuff. What it's going to take to get out of there is multiple washes with Bold. And speaking of Bold, the Bold taste of bullseye barbecue sauce. No. So he goes to AA Cole, picks him up, like you say, the globule drips down his back, and then Lord Sodding Tensai shows up and takes out Cena. I'll be honest, I didn't see it coming. I've completely forgot that bit. And Cole is propped up in the corner. I don't know why I found it so funny, but he's just got a tiny piece of his shirt. It looks like I don't know how to describe it, like a band, like a wristband. But it's just the collar of his shirt. Anyway, he realizes what's happened. He crawls over, scrambles over, coated in barbecue sauce to try and steal one. But of course, Cena kicks out at two. And Cole sort of tries to paintbrush Cena whilst yelling, "You did this to me!" He sees the fire extinguisher in the corner, picks it up, runs at Cena, but gets AA'd and pinned. Thank Christ. And then, I guarantee Sidge will have liked this as well. After the match is over, little graphic appears on the screen promoting Raw's Super Show with their two biggest stars, Vince McMahon and John Laurinaitis, next week. And the clip ends basically with Lawler talking bollocks about people power and Cena's, quote, huge victory over Michael Cole. Your thoughts on this ending, Michael Sidgwick?
The decline of professional wrestling in the West?
Until
into a lesser extent in 2015 NXT.
I have to say, I had a lot of fun looking through the comments. As I said, the WWE video of this has surprisingly comments turned off, but I found another one and it was an absolute goldmine. So just indulge me for a few minutes here, lads. Vadim is Vlad writes 3 years ago this, Sidge. Take it off the list. Oh, I miss this WWE.
I mean, to a degree, I do too, because I generally felt that might be pushing Daniel Bryan and CM Punk a bit.
He wrote that in 2018. What brilliant match was he not bothering with to watch this instead on YouTube?
Mark Carter just writes, make Michael Cole wear a weasel costume. I don't know why.
I mean, he's absolutely not the heel who would ordinarily have worn a weasel costume. So that guy can fuck off.
Aaron Knight writes, closest thing to a bra and panties match in years.
I knew it, man. I told you yesterday, I said, there's going to be you shouted out how many views this WWE video had done. I said, there is going to be a corner of the fetish world that is very catered to by this match because of all that goddamn barbecue sauce.
I watched a 1970s All Japan match between Jumbo Tsuruta and I can't remember the opponent. But I'd scroll down at the comments and just someone said, nice ass on Jumbo. And I was like, oh, I mean, I'm not against the last thing you'd expect, hot ass on Jumbo. And it's like, well, you know, I'm not, there's nothing wrong with that. I just didn't expect to read it, and that's fine. 70s All Japan fetishism. It's great that it exists.
Like you say, people get carried away with these sorts of videos because it's taken a little bit further by Aryan Acharya, who says, I think John Cena should remove Michael Cole's, and then this is written in capitals, underwear! So, also, I love, you know, when you stumble across like old videos and someone's just gone, I think this is this place to share my genius booking ideas. This will finally get picked up because Aero Chalk writes, there needs to be a wrestler like Carlito, but vape in people's faces.
The famous smoking enthusiast Vince McMahon would be all about that.
This one caught my eye for two reasons. The second half, which I'm going to shout, is written in all caps. Okay, so they've really got passion about it. And also the person's name is R. Wilborn Faith. Okay. They write, it's a long one, this, so stick with me. Why does Michael Cole always try to wrestle a wrestler knowing full well he cannot cut the cake and he gets his behind beat every single time? All caps now. You want some of me? He'd be trying to go up against the best wrestlers of all time and actually believes he's going to win. I believe Linda McMahon can whoop his candy ass. So yes, Michael, it is funny, very funny.
I love cut the cake, by the way. He cannot cut the cake. I would say that. I don't like mustard. But, like, you know.
I'm having tonight Nigella Lawson's fried chicken burger. You're going to hate this. Marinated the actual chicken thigh last night in mustard, buttermilk, honey, paprika, and syrup and salt. And I'm putting on it, Hamlet, lettuce. Do you like lettuce?
Yeah.
Now you like lettuce. Of course you do. Sriracha.
It doesn't look like it, but I do.
Sriracha hot chili sauce.
Yeah, I'm out.
Mayo. And kimchi.
What, Kamala's manager?
At least three condiments there. At least three.
I didn't even know that was a thing. I thought it was just a brawler. I don't know. I like it.
Do you know what I'm having for tea tonight? Barbecue sauce on my titties. Right, final couple of comments.
Wow.
I've got like two things. Alethi, I got the barbecue sauce, Alethi.
A couple of comments. Amanda Fraser writes, no wonder King had a heart attack. What? You can't report.
What?
But my favourite of all is a comment followed by a reply. Avichal writes, quite rightly, as we've pointed out, am I the only one who's hating John because he's hitting an old man? And Liam Thompson replies, no, you bitch.
Is that Dennis Reynolds?
Oh, dear. Great. So anyway, thanks to Coach Marv for allowing Hamlet to pick that one. Suggest five-star review by subscribing to What Culture Wrestling. Leave us a five-star review and suggesting something short crap and wrestling related, you bitch. Okay, so on the back of Jeff Hardy beating Elias and Jackson Ryker beating Jeff Hardy, we had the tag match, Sheamus and Keith Lee versus Miz and Morrison. Hey, hey, ho, ho. Main takeaway from this, aside from Sheamus and Keith Lee working together to win, was Keith Lee breaking the bloody ring, Michael Hamflett.
Yeah, I don't know, is this the version for this particular feud of Ric Flair shagging Lacey Evans in a hotel? It was something different. It was something interesting. It was something to talk about. Because the match was really drab otherwise. You know, there was a time, of course, quite famously, that the ring breaking resulted in a title change no longer taking place. It was a match between the Rockers and the Hart Foundation that was deemed unworthy of airing, basically. Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels specifically were very unhappy with how it looked and didn't want it to air, and thus the Rockers didn't win the tag titles. I can tell you for a fact that the Rockers versus the Hearts with the Broken Ring is 10 times the match that this was, because this was drab. But I'm going to end this on a positive. I'm pig sick of Keith Lee and Sheamus fussing and feuding. So I was glad that they worked it out, they worked together, and the match ended on a high for the pair of them, because I didn't need any more of them two fighting. So it was just nice that they actually, even under all the panic of Drew's COVID announcement, they didn't just sort of revert to type and they actually won the match. People get along in this company for a change. That was earnestly nice to see.
Yeah, very good point. It was Lee's smashing Morrison in the corner that basically broke the turnbuckle. Lee just did, you know, impressive spots that are getting less and less impressive because they're just overdoing it a little bit. WWE threw Morrison into Miz, then eventually Morrison hit a Pele kick, but Lee took him out as he was flying through the air, coming off the ropes, and Lee set up for a big finish, but Sheamus tagged in, bro kick, 1, 2, 3, and as much as, you know, Sheamus had kind of stolen the victory away from Keith Lee, it was fine. They were both happy to have got the victory, as Hamflet alluded to. Let's move on. Triple H got a chat into Sarah Schreiber backstage. He said people like Ric Flair and Bob Orton paved the way for guys like them. And Randy needs to understand that. And he officially accepted the challenge, not for a match, but for a fight later on. And then we went to the break. When we come back, Keith Lee and Sheamus are arguing and fighting in the ring. And the ref calls for the bell. The match stops. The announcers go, well, they were getting on, but they're fighting again now. And then they have a back and forth sort of brawl that goes everywhere. Eventually, Keith Lee nails Sheamus with the spirit bomb. 1, 2, 3. And afterwards, Keith Lee offers him a fist. And Sheamus says, put that away, pal. Gives him a hug. Sidge, your thoughts?
I mean, what on earth was this? Just, I don't know if I watched these things too early in a haze, or if just WWE makes zero sense. And I think I know the answer. It's both. Look, I'll talk about the match as it happened, what was scheduled, what there never is. I don't know whether it was because there's a scene in The Sopranos where Tony Soprano's talking about, I loved watching that fight. Then Melfi turns around and says, did you want to do the hitting or were you the one wanting to get hit? And it's like, oh. I think I just enjoyed watching Keith Lee and Sheamus in this drab, forgettable match just pound each other for a little bit because I thought I could do with some of that as penance for watching this.
Yeah. there's going to be a lot of takes along the lines of, now can people please stop whinging about Keith Lee? Two big wins on Monday Night Raw. As if they haven't come from this nonsensical block of television. Did you notice on this Raw, with the Jeff Elias thing and with this, and I think there's another example that we might have already talked about.
Riddle.
They're getting back to this creative how to get through adverts thing. This was very much an episode akin to the 2 out of 3 falls era, wasn't it? Well, we're going to have to run it back. Come back after the break. Raw has stopped rolling on again for a bit. And this was what we were served as a way to do that. No explanation. Nobody gets along in this company. Nobody. Ms. Morrison do, and look where it gets them. So maybe people should be fighting each other.
Congratulations, by the way, to Michael Hamflet, who correctly called this when I said, what's next for Keith Lee? And he said, either nothing or pointless feuds with Sheamus. And that's exactly what happened. But like you say, he was the only person who pulled double duty, who won both of his matches. So credit where credit is due. We got a video package recapping what happened with Goldberg and McIntyre and cutting out the bit where Goldberg doesn't make any sense, really. And then Drew McIntyre cut a promo saying he was a big Goldberg fan when he was young and starstruck even when Goldberg returned last week. But he said, as the saying goes, never meet your heroes, specifically your heroes immediately after they've headbutted a door, presumably. Goldberg let him down last week when he put words into his mouth. McIntyre is a big believer in giving respect to get respect. And he said he knew that the WWE Championship has always eluded Goldberg. He didn't want to accept the Goldberg challenge initially because of their age difference. But his mind changed when Goldberg put his hands on him. And he said, in your own words, Bill, you're next. No real great surprise, this Hamflet, was it?
Again, was this really much of a diversion from what they would have planned for Drew McIntyre if he was in the building? Probably not. If anything, what they might do now is just leave it there. A couple of Goldberg video packages. They might bring Goldberg back to the Thunderdome to run a spear through somebody. I don't know, maybe he can just take out all of Retribution in one massive showing or something. Space. You don't need to use Drew until the Rumble. So they're in a relatively decent position with the build of that match. I don't need much more of the build. It's been established. It was messy last week, but they've tidied it up this week. And the match is something different. I wasn't like full of hatred for it last week. It's an okay Royal Rumble WWE title match, to be honest. And they've given me enough of a satisfying build. And I'm slightly curious to see how it goes.
And I'm gonna, my eyes will be fixed to it. That's what Goldberg does. Whether you think it's a disgrace that he's back, I don't think it is. It's an indictment, it's not a disgrace. I'm less high on it than I would have been had Goldberg done something in 2018, because his match at WrestleMania 33 was great. He looks just like a knackered old bloke. No, really? Old Bill. But I will watch it without wanting to look at my phone. That's the test for WWE now. Are you really hyped for this? Well, I'll watch it without looking at my phone. And that's Goldberg.
I haven't had a chance to ask you, Sid, your thoughts on Postman Pierce versus Roman Reigns on the Blue Brand.
I mean, what's that? Forget the fact that they've got that roster and they're going to do an authority figure storyline and have him in a match. What's Roman Reigns now? Does he want the easy way out? Is he doing this just to be awful? I think it's just a stupid match to do. Like, a stupid, stupid match to do.
I don't think it's going to be the match.
No, I've heard that.
I think it's a fun graphic for a week and then something else.
Well, we'll get to Postman Pierce in due course, actually. But we had, before that, Riddle talking about pizza to Lucha House Party, who just couldn't understand. What's he talking about? They thought, are you hungry? What's going on? But he was talking about how
pizza... California slang word. It's pizza. I do not know what it is.
But he was saying pizza was a metaphor for beating Bobby Lashley for the United States Championship. They said, good luck, man. Hey, watch your back. And Riddle goes, yeah. He doesn't understand. I can't watch his back. It's like trying to look at your own ears. You can't do it. And then we got the match we'd all been waiting for, Sid. T-Bar versus Xavier Woods.
Favourite thing about this match, other than T-Bar's like stupid, menacing, modulated voice thing that he tries to do, is that after a few people, myself included, decided, let's rip the piss out of Retribution. It's funny, and I'll probably get some likes because they're in the news. They are now so irrelevant that the old rent free in your head, that doesn't work anymore because no one gives a fuck. So that's funny. That's funny on T-Bar. That's funny. I only ever wanted the likes, T-Bar. So.
Yeah, Kofi wasn't next. He apparently had a broken jaw at the hands of the Hurt Business. And then T-Bar couldn't even beat Xavier clean. There was a distraction by Mace Mustafa Ali.
Is he like, I don't like T-Bar the character. I think the performer is what he is. To give him credit, is he totally bulked up to play this guy, T-Bar? I'm sure Dijakovic was far slimmer.
He looks far more Bane, let's say, than Dijakovic.
Yeah, he's small as all hell, isn't he? Mm. And for what? For this? Well, I'll never remember this match in about 5 million years.
It's the office IT guy as well, isn't it? Gone off Ricochet, have you?
Yeah.
Where was any of that this week?
Yeah, he won with the Feast Your Eyes. Moving on. United States Championship match, all 2 minutes. Bobby Lashley versus Riddle. Unfortunately, this week, Riddle didn't know the old Gary the Goat Gar, but got your number. He just tapped out after Lashley jumped in before the bell, which you think, well, that's a bit of a heel move. But then I remembered Riddle did that last week. So he hit a floating bro on the outside. Lashley applied the Hurt Lock. Riddle tapped and the referee was in the right position. So Lashley retained. And then as they were leaving, Riddle grabbed the mic and went, yeah, well, I'll fight you then, MVP. And MVP accepted the match, and then Riddle won via DQ after Riddle knocked Lashley down with a PK, hit MVP with a floating bro, and then got speared. And they beat the crap out of him and then left. Hamlet, your thoughts?
What a detestable, pathetic tosspot Riddle was here. And that's an easier thing to think when I'm watching Matt Riddle work than trying to get behind him. So it worked for me. Just abysmal. Worse than last, they did it. This was worse than last week. this was worse than the I'm tapping now, but the referee can't see, so I'm the real winner. This was worse. Like, who is the guy that challenges the one who's in his, like, in his office clothes? Are you in your suit and tie? Right there, I'll take you on. Awful. Just awful. I'm rooting for the Hurt Business just like I was last week. Come on, guys. Keep it together, please. You're the act I care about. You're the act I'm invested in. Riddle's a tit. I'm on the side of the Lucha House Party because he was talking bollocks there as well. Just a total mess, but a fine mess to me, because that's how I'd rather receive this man and this character.
If you can, just separate the art from the artist. This is a disgrace. Matt Riddle is playing the most obnoxious babyface doppelganger of The Miz, essentially. He's the annoying babyface, where Miz is the annoying heel. He's playing an annoying babyface who's also a chicken heel who got what was coming to him. What was coming to him, and it was delivered quite magnificently by Bobby Lashley. How is this meant to get him over as a babyface? Like, Vince McMahon is on the decline.
AJ Styles was chatting with Postman Pierce backstage, saying, well, maybe if I win the Rumble and Roman Reigns slips on 8 banana peels, then we can face each other at WrestleMania. When Drew Gulak shows up and says, I'd like to announce my entry into the Royal Rumble. And for once, WWE went, we can't just do that, because otherwise everyone would do that.
And then people did later on the show.
Yeah. Gulak said, well, you did. And AJ Styles, yeah, but I'm a 2-time world champion. Also, AJ Styles, and I love Drew Gulak, but still. Gulak had proof on a flash drive to prove he's beaten people, I think, or to prove he should get into the Rumble. But Pierce wasn't asked. Instead, you face AJ Styles for 3 minutes. And yeah, they went 3 minutes. And Styles hoied Gulak to the outside. You got a quite a great shot, to be fair, of Big George, because they can't decide what they're calling him. I'm calling him Big George. I'll always call him Big George. Big George's foot, and this pan up to this giant of a man that sort of terrifies Drew Gulak. Styles hoys him back in the ring. Phenomenal forearm. 1, 2, 3. Handful. Good to see Big George looking big ahead of the Royal Rumble. That's all I'll say.
He sure looked big, didn't he? I really liked Drew Gulak's new look, and I apologise if this look is 6 months old, but I don't watch 205 Live. I've got 2 kids. But I thought he looked great. I thought the gear and the haircut and the whole thing. Like a nice upgrade. It's that kind of, Drew Gulak strikes me as a guy that always tries. Mm. He follows that advice that is futile, ultimately. But that whole thing about, you know, if this isn't working, try this. If this isn't working, try that. We've seen lots of different versions of Drew Gulak, and all of them are interesting as well. All of them, like, give you something to talk about. The PowerPoint guy, the guy that was Daniel Bryan's equal, you know, the harder edge Drew Gulak, this version of him now, who I assume is some sort of like cruiserweight dynamo, not exactly sure. So the match was, like, I quite enjoyed what little I got of this match. AJ is really form still, a lot to like about AJ Styles on promos and in the ring. But, you know, don't talk about rankings on flash drives and win-loss records and how you qualify for the Rumble, because as you both pointed out, it falls apart instantly. It falls apart as they're delivering the lines, it falls apart. So you can't go anywhere near any of that. So the setup and the premise was ludicrous. But I actually quite enjoyed what we got out there in the ring.
Some quite nice professional wrestling, yes. AJ Styles appears to have turned babyface. I know this only because the last two wrestlers he's faced are heels and Elias and Drew Gulak, with no storyline explanation. And the dissonance of the fact that the babyface has like an 8-foot-tall security guard bodyguard backing him up, who informed his victory here because his mere presence, as it would, just terrified Gulak into the distraction. Vince McMahon is insane. Like, he's deteriorating by the week.
Video package of Goldberg, that saved me a nice 5 minutes early on a Tuesday morning. And then Keith Lee approached Triple H in the back, said, look, he'd always been there for me when I was coming up through this company. I'll be there for you. I don't mind working a third time tonight, taking your place. And Triple H said, no, I'm going to lose myself.
And he goes, love this. Yeah. Love this.
Just the idea that Triple H is like, oh God, do I give him the match? Do I give him the match? You're goddamn right I do. And everyone's meant to be like, yes, Triple H is going to do it.
I love it, man. Same again. Love it. Like, Bray Wyatt's on fire. I don't care. Keith Lee, I don't need you. What the hell did he say about Shawn Michaels?
I was looking at the clock at this point going, oh, they're going to give him like 15 minutes here. It's going to be awful. And then...
That was Jeff Hardy for Matt Riddle. Just yet another complaint about the show. Carry on.
Then Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler came out and we had an inset promo with Mandy Rose and Dana Brooke. Here's where they pointed out, Sige, something about Kim and Kanye and kicking people to the curb and what have you, and just randomly said, oh, yeah, we'll be in the Royal Rumble. And, yeah, it looked like...
this was sort of like...
The same show.
They're so alike, those two. Did you see that they said things at the same time? Not like that fake chemistry between Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville. Rubbish. Like, they're just these two. They're so in sync. This took the piss. I think I love to hate Mandy Rose and Dana Brooke because they're the iconics. They just don't realise it. Like, backstage, oh, these idiots again.
It's like in those old sitcoms when, like, the lead actor would, like, go off the rails or get... like a better role and just leave, and then they would just sub someone in. You're like, you're meant to know who he was the whole time.
Oh, it's Cousin Vinny, he's never appeared before.
Hey, yo, wee.
are we suggesting that instead of Dana Brooke, they should have replaced Sonya Deville with David Spade?
In another like 3.5 minute match, Shayna Baszler. I sat there watching this going, it's less than a year since she eliminated everyone from the Elimination Chamber. And I realised it's just been a downward spiral since then, and also preceding that in the Royal Rumble. But yeah, she was eating quite a lot of offence here for the first 3 minutes. Thankfully, though, Nia Jax came in and took over. And then as it looked like she was going to go off the ropes, Baszler, you'll never guess, we haven't seen this for ages, since an hour before, tags in and steals a victory for her by choking out Mandy Rose.
What was Nia Jax's expression? Because if you'd fast-forwarded to the bit just after the tag when Shayna Baszler was tapping her, Nia Jax looked as if, oh, God, she looks formidable. I'd be pissed off that she's stolen the glory of the match that the result is mad. I hate it all.
You know, this was no good, this match, right? And
yeah, I know.
The women... I don't think I'm on my own here. Like, they're mostly what people watch WWE main roster for now. They're typically the best bit. This women's division is a mess. Asuka's the world champion, and, you know, of what, really? Of nothing.
The world.
The underneath on this show was highlighted here in the form of two rotten matches, bad angles, lousy characters. Women's wrestling is the one thing for the most part WWE is like continue to do an okay job with, and that's mainly because we like the wrestlers more than you like the storylines. I've had one good storyline. It's miserable. Like, the state of the undercard is absolutely miserable, and it's, you know, there's no excuses because they've got the roster, they've got the numbers. It's in an absolute state, and I think it's one of the few things that they're not getting criticism for. People are on them for pretty much everything, like on them for just about everything else because this show's abhorrent. But yeah, it's about time to call attention to the fact that the women's division's a complete mess.
Don't worry, Rhea Ripley's going to come along soon to Monday Night Raw and then get called Rhea Ripley, more like Vicar of Dibley, or so, I don't know, some bollocks like that. Main event time again, early on a Tuesday. Any time I can save is great. And with 10 minutes left of the show, we had full entrances for Randy Orton and Triple H. So I went, oh, skip. There we go. 5 minutes to go. Fantastic. Orton, oh, he's not sure about getting in the ring, Michael Sidgwick, because I'm not sure he knows, but it's probably Triple H in there. Who I saw someone on Twitter say, Triple H's first big match since, oh, yeah, facing Randy Orton in Saudi Arabia. He sort of gets in and out, or when he gets dropped by a punch by Triple H, and then eventually comes in and they brawl to the outside. Orton uses an eye poke, tries to put him through the announce table. Triple H blocks and suplexes him through the announce table instead. Orton gets back into the ring. Triple H grabs his trusty sledgehammer. The lights start slowly turning off, you know, the Fiend and Bray Wyatt and what have you. But Triple H sort of gets distracted by it, and then goes, oh, no, bollocks, I should go back to the match. And then hits a burning hammer. No, sorry, has a burning hammer. Sorry. lights go out. Triple H buggers off at this point. Alexa Bliss is there in the corner. She holds her hand up to her chin, says, what is it, pain? I can't remember.
Pain.
Yeah. And then she... shoots a fireball. Shoots a fireball into Randy Orton's face. He sells, he rides around. Byron Saxton said, could be blind, you know. And then the show goes off the air.
Sorry, I'm not sure.
I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to the Dadleys.
About Alexa Bliss.
I have to say Little Miss Bliss, because if I say, Alexa, play Fireball, you'll put on bloody Pitbull or whatever.
Sign up for Amazon Music Unlimited.
Didn't work. Get in. Get in. His bit didn't work. This is trash. This is pure
Alexa,
trash.
Alexa, shut up.
I love the idea.
Alexa, off. Stop this. Sorry, 1 second. Right, okay, carry on, Sage.
I love the idea, right? I love it so much. It brings me so much pleasure, right? So much happiness that Triple H like didn't, it had to be a fight. Be a fight because he didn't want to like ruin the sanctity of his cage match.net record because it's so good. It's so good. You know, I might actually watch me wrestle at WrestleMania. So it's had to be a fight. Could be a match, but a fight. It was 4 minutes of garbage before some crap with Alexa Bliss.
I am more interested as to the whereabouts of Vink than I am Triple H after this. Like, he's disappeared. I don't care. He was told at the 11th hour, hey, you're a lifelong professional. You brought your gear. Nope. It's a, I've got a motor shirt. It's a fight. Like Flair and Dusty.
Like Richard Flair and...
Virgil Reynolds. Guys that paved the way. Because he never watched a goddamn Bob Orton match in his life. probably Randy didn't either. Oh, I didn't blame him. He's overrated. Like, rubbish. Rubbish. And, you know, again, there'll be, I think, excuses made for why we've had this instead. On balance, I think I prefer this to what would have been a Drew McIntyre-Randy Orton 15-minute main event. Like, this was shorter. Get his hammer set on fire. Triple H has been swallowed up by Bray Wyatt's world. Like that, to be fair, sort of serves Triple H right for not giving a single toss about Bray Wyatt being burnt alive, doesn't it? Like, that'll show you. That'll show you, King of Kings.
Maybe that excuses the burial, or maybe he's just a complete dick.
This Raw was bad.
Yeah. The show sucks. The show is so boring and so illogical. So bad. It's so bad. Can I give him my Twitter handle?
Yeah, I was going to say, let us know your thoughts on Monday Night Raw on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. Watch that. You can follow all three of us. You can follow Michael Hamflett at...
Michael Hamflett.
You can follow Michael Sidgwick at...
M. Sidgwick.
You can follow me at Adam Wilborn and see how the Raw should have ended. A good video on there, Adam Wilborn. At WhatCultureWWE for all of us. As I said, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling wherever you get your podcasts from for daily wrestling podcasts. And whilst you do that, leave us a 5-star review, just like Coach Marv did. She's suggesting something short, crap, and wrestling related so we can skip just about anything on Monday Night Raw. But anyway, this has been the Raw Review. My thanks to the Dudley Boys. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you. Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact. You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states.
United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.